Well, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. My name is Urban Nugent, and today, as always, I am joined by my friend, co-host, and collaborator, Bridget Tyre. Bridget, how are you doing?
Well, Urban, it's great to be here with you today. I am doing very well, thank you. Before we hit the record button, we were just chatting and catching up, and you have been a world traveler, getting back here in the States. I have not been doing that, and so I'm not jet lagged at all today, but you might be a little
bit. I know, yeah. If my words didn't come out straight, it's because I had a little plane, trains, and airplanes getting back from, I was in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, so I missed some connections. So it was a long 2 days getting home, but hey, I brought, just so that you know, I brought the heat with me. It was 120 in Abu Dhabi, and I said, you know, you need to share a little bit on that. As we sit, we are frying in the next couple of days, so I thought you would like that.
It's a bit toasty.
And it is. Toasty is the word for it. Yeah.
You know, you had, as you shared with me, a little bit of a delay in the airport, but not to worry because it gave you time to think about the topic for today.
Yeah. Well, talk about a toasty topic and things that make us sweat. I thought today's topic is something actually that makes leaders sweat a lot. And that's the topic about resistance and sabotage. Now, if you are a leader listening to this podcast and you say, you know, I don't think I've ever experienced resistance and I don't think anyone's sabotaged me, then let me tell you, it's coming to you.
Yeah.
Don't know when, but it will. It's really an occupational hazard of leadership. And, you know, in the midst of that, it is a very uncomfortable experience for many leaders because they begin to question themselves. What am I doing? Am I doing it right? Why are people resistant? And the first thing, of course, is they doubt themselves. They doubt their skills. And what we want to say today is maybe that most of the time, it's actually a sign that you might be doing something correctly. So let's explore these experiences of resistance and sabotage and show some new light on them and bring up some great examples. You probably have heard us talk a lot about one of the thinkers in this space that we talk about in systems thinking, and that's Ed Freeman. And he wrote a very famous book called A Failure of Nerve, and he speaks about this. This is one of the very common things that happens in systems. And he said, sabotage is not merely something to be avoided or wished away. Instead, it comes with the territory of leading, whether the territory is a family or an organization. So if you are leading an organization and if you're leading a family, just think, you know, if you can think of an experience as a leader of an organization, think about your family because, boy, there'll be some good examples in there. And it just comes with the territory. So, Bridget, to kick off, I am curious, what have you noticed about yourself when you face resistance?
I love this question because it causes me to really think about that. What I notice at first is it depends. It depends on my internal state. So if I'm in a pretty centered place, you know, let's say that I have started my day with some reflection and I'm being intentional about the quality of presence that I want to bring to the day. And then I bump up against someone who is pushing back, someone who is resisting me, right? Whether that is a family member, maybe a client, or I don't know, somebody in traffic getting in my way. If I'm in a centered place, I'm much more likely to respond with curiosity. Be kind of like, huh. Look at this. This is interesting. And I think that's one, I'm trained as a coach, but two, because I have this systems perspective, right? And all the things you just said, I can be curious about. However, if I'm off center, if I'm tired, if I'm stressed, it's a different reaction. And I think then I can get a little tight. I can get a little short and maybe a little defensive. So that's what I noticed.
Wow. That's great observation.
I'm, of course, very curious about what's true for you when you get resistance.
Yeah. Well, I think I put it in the context that my name is Irvin Nugent and I'm a recovering people pleaser, you know? So part of this is I think at times I feel innately that I can win people over. I think my experience has been, you know, that I create a lot of energy and people follow. And then when people don't, I'm like, what? What's this about? So I think I default often to what I just talked about at the beginning, which is, what did I do wrong? Like something must have happened. I think my default is to go into a little bit of self-judgment. And then I think I try and cultivate a little bit of curiosity about what this is all about. And I think that's something that has come with age, training, you know, as a coach, et cetera. Yeah. And I think there's a little nuance there. But I got to say, my home base is still a little bit off. There's a little tweak going on. I can zoom out. I can rationalize. But I have to say, my home base, I like to say, is that I'm either a little bit disappointed or whatever. And I think I admire your observation there about if I'm tired, et cetera, I'm not able to see it as quickly. Whereas if I'm rested and reflective, I see it a lot quicker.
I appreciate your transparency and honesty because I don't know. I think we all take it personally.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a common reaction.
So, Bridget, I'm curious now, let's just look at this problem. We've mentioned a few times, we tend to look at things from systems perspectives, and systems perspectives, of course, is so often when we're in the midst of a problem, we're zooming in, you know, we're the microscope, and really systems is really about zooming out.
It is.
So as we zoom out, what is it about resistance and sabotage? What might a systems perspective offer us, perhaps that a zooming in doesn't?
Oh, it's just so incredibly helpful to zoom out and look at the system as a whole, right? Mm. And one of the things we've talked about on previous episodes is that all relationship systems have predictable ways of reacting to change, to anxiety, and whether that's a family or an organization. And one of those predictable responses is resistance. Now, why is that? You know, it has to do with the nature of systems themselves. So while it feels deeply personal, like you were saying, it's like, hey, why couldn't I win this person over? You know, why don't they like me? It's really not about you often. It's about the system. And what is the system trying to do? So what it's trying to do is maintain equilibrium, maintain homeostasis, protect its integrity, right? All systems work that way. If you think about it, whether it's planetary systems or bodily systems or organizational systems, they seek to maintain equilibrium and fight off perceived threats. So when you're initiating change, let's say, you can be perceived as a threat. It's not you, it's just the change. And, you know, think about how our bodies react to viruses. We produce antibodies to fight off the virus. Isn't that what an organization is doing when it resists you? Kind of like that, right?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, leaders are called to lead people to new destinations. And that means creating change.
Yeah.
If you're doing your job, you're going to invite resistance. And the key is expect it, embrace it, do not run from it, and do not buckle under the weight of it. Take heart instead, right?
Yeah.
Because as Friedman used to say, it could be a sign that you're doing something right. And I think that, you know, I always go back to that.
Yeah.
Because as you were saying in the beginning, Irvin, this is something when leaders face pushback and resistance, many of them will doubt themselves.
Yes.
And what we're saying is, no, perhaps this is a sign you're doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. You know, what was coming back to me, there's a great quote, and I don't know where he got this. This comes back to my seminary days in Ireland. And I can't even remember what we were talking about, but the quote just is burnt into my brain. I love it. And he says, remember, if everyone's life is a movie, you are nothing more than an extra in the other person's movie, and stop making yourself the main character. I love it because so often, whenever we look at what's going on in another person's life, we make ourselves the main actor. Wow. It's like, it's all about us and we forget that in many ways, we're just the extra. What's going on in their lives is something else is going on, and we're jumping to conclusions, etc. And this is where we get ourselves so often into trouble, especially in this, in the resistance and the sabotage. It's really not about us. It is about how the other person's dealing with it, or rather not dealing with
it. Yeah, what a great quote. We're just an extra.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's like, you know, I've used that in other things as well. It's like, stop inserting yourself. You know, I like to think when leaders do a little bit of a systems check and they say, you know, hey, I've listened, I've done everything I can, and then this is happening. Well, then there's something else going on. This is not about me.
Yeah. Okay. So we're now going to ask the question our listeners, I know, are asking, well, so what can we do in the face of resistance and sabotage? Yes, we're going to get it. Yes, we can embrace it and not run from it and recognize that it isn't personal. That helps.
Yeah.
You know, Irvin, what else can leaders do?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think I'll point to two things, and it comes up immediately for me, and both of which I am guilty of, and I've learned through experience. So the first one is, it's kind of laying a foundation for change. Change is difficult. Mm-hmm. And the reality is most of us, the vast, vast majority of people, do not like change because we are creatures literally of habit, and we love routines, and change is scary, and we live in a world of constant change. We've said this time and time again in our podcasts, you know, and that's not changing. That is with us. And I think a rookie mistake that leaders can make is to make changes too quickly. Now, if the fire is burning, you have to make a change. That's one thing. But so often we don't. We get to plan changes.
Yeah.
And we forget to kind of build up a coalition of people to bring with us as we're making the changes. And I think we at times don't plan anticipating resistance. We don't plan anticipating perhaps that certain groups will not like this. And what do we do? So I think the first one is we need to just maybe be really thoughtful about planning this change. Is it the right time? What can I do to really make this change effective and communicate and just lay the groundwork as best we possibly can.
I love that.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is a rookie mistake.
Yes. I did it. I remember when I became CEO of Catholic Charities and I thought I had to prove myself. I have learned in my coaching that that happens more often than not with new leaders, that we have to prove ourselves and we don't have to prove ourselves.
That's right.
Yeah. And then the second thing is another mistake or tendency I have is that when someone resists us, it is so easy to have negative thoughts about them. It's so easy to demonize them. It's so easy to say, well, what's up with you, etc. And in doing that, we tend to cut off our relationship with them. Yeah. And from a systems perspective, this is where we get into danger because there's a balance, and it is an art. But there is a balance that part of what we need to do is we need to, first of all, remain strong in our desire for change. The actual change we want to is right, and be connected, stay connected to those who are resistant.
Yeah.
And because if we don't, then we lose our influence. If I demonize someone and I cut off communication with them, then there's no influence going on there. I'm in my own world making up information. They're in their own world responding. Can we remain connected? Because, you know, in the arc of change, people eventually come around.
Yeah.
And if we're able to influence them, if we're able to have conversations, etc., that will happen more naturally. And if we cut ourselves off, then that's not going to happen. We're leaving someone really in their own thoughts. So I think the second one is remain connected to those who are resistant. And that can be difficult at times because sometimes the complaints get old. That's another one that I've done.
Yeah, and I think it's such a natural tendency to want to disconnect from people who are making, you know, trouble for us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Making absolutely. Our lives difficult. Why totally. Wouldn't we want to stay connected to them?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Anything else come to mind, Bridget, did you think about this?
I think, you know, as I listen to you, a lot of this is really about balance, right? And so we have to balance that understanding you mentioned that change is difficult. So we got to have some compassion. For the fact that when we are initiating or leading change, it requires a lot of people. But we have to balance that compassion with not forgetting the challenge. And so that means, yes, listening and recognizing people's complaints and even giving them an opportunity to voice those complaints while never losing sight of the vision, the pathway forward, right? That's a delicate balancing act. And I think one way leaders can strike that balance is to really understand the difference between productive complaints and reactive complaints, because you're going to get complaints, right? I mean, you are simply not going to please everybody with what you do. Some of those complaints are really worth listening to because they're productive. Yeah. And that means that the person has stepped back a little bit from the situation and really thought about it, has examined the situation, is maybe bringing something to your attention that you were unaware of. So lean in to those complaints. But reactive complaints have a different energy about them. Yeah. That's when people come at you and they are venting, they are frustrated, you know, maybe they're angry, they don't pick the right time, maybe they complain to the wrong person. And it's really actually not about the content of the complaint. It's really just them getting the anxiety of the change off their chest.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Lean into the former, and with the latter, teach people how to make productive complaints.
Yeah.
All the while, don't lose sight of your North Star and what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's a balancing act, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, Irvin, let's give our listeners an example of somebody who struck this balancing act while leading change. Who comes to mind for you?
You know, when as I thought about this, an article I read, a really great one a few years ago, and I kind of reread it because I thought, oh, this is, I think, a really good example. And it concerns Anne Mulcahy. She was the CEO of Xerox. And, you know, growing up, Xerox is one of those names. You remember kind of growing up was like, you know, can I Xerox you something? You know what company's made it when their name is used for an action, you know?
Yes.
So, but in 2001, technology was changing. Xerox found itself on the brink of collapse. You know, it had, I think, about $17 billion in debt, was facing SEC investigations, et cetera. And there was a little faith in the company. And so, and even though she had worked in kind of Xerox, I think it was a surprise move to name her CEO. And certainly at that stage, one of the few women CEOs as well. And she faced so much resistance and sabotage, which was interesting. So first of all, there was internal resistance. They resisted her leadership. They said she was an outsider. Even though she'd been with the company for years, she wasn't part of the old guard. She was something new. Her background was in sales and HR. And so she didn't come there as a schmi, you know, around technology. Yeah. And so that was resisted. And then she's a poor woman. She was resisted then in the boardroom. She was actively undermined because it was a famous thing that happened where they leaked some pessimistic outlooks to the media to stir investor panic so that the investors would rise up. So literally she did face sabotage. And then there were within the organization as well, those who resisted some of the changes. So obviously if a company is $17 billion in debt, you're going to have some cuts, et cetera. So there was cost-cutting efforts. There was shutting down of some unprofitable lines of business. And so there was a lot of lobbying behind the scenes to stop this as well. So here you have this perfect storm, you know, kind of a resistance, an internal resistance from leadership, a boardroom resistance, and then changes that were made and resistant to those changes. So it's just a lot. That's a lot. And so what did she do? I think, first of all, which is interesting, is remember this, you know, remain connected, remain connected, and yet, you know, this compassion and yet the ability to challenge. So she, first of all, you know, was embarked in strategic listening and ally building. She listened to the sense. She didn't shut it off. And there was a lot of it. There was a boardroom, everyone. And then, but she acted decisively in the midst of that. So she surrounded herself with allies that were going to back her in the change. She didn't try to convince everyone. Cool. She said, I'm not going to convince everyone. Not everyone. This is a new company I'm building, and it may not be the home for everyone. So she tried to bring along people. There was a lot of transparency. You know, so she didn't try and sugarcoat things. She told both the shareholders, employees, the truth that Xerox is not going to make it. These are changes. Here's why we're making these changes. And even though there was a lot of resistance, I think her authenticity helped as well. And in the midst of that, I think she rebuilt a culture, which was all about accountability, about the customers. You know, there was a lot of entitlement, I think, and turf wars, which is interesting. I think you find that a lot. You know, it's kind of like, I don't want to give up my, you know, you give up yours. I'm not giving up mine.
Right.
And then kind of crafting a shared mission. And by the mid-2000s, you know, Xerox was back in the black. It had a new sales model and it had returned to profitability. And I think, you know, in many ways, this is, it's such a good example of leading through sabotage and very, a lot of skepticism of this, you know, some of the things we've talked about of remain listening, hold firm, knowing you're not going to bring everyone along with you. Don't doubt yourself that the changes you're making are for the good of the company. And if we don't make changes, then, you know, something's going to happen. So I just, when I read that, I think this is such a great example of resistance and sabotage and really how to deal with it.
It's inspiring. I mean, wow, like textbook. You know, it makes me want to read up a little bit more on it. You know, the stamina that would be required.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
Persist, because the way you, in the way you told the story, she was literally engulfed by resistance.
Yeah. It was almost like a 360 degree resistance, you know? It was kind of like everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think to our listeners, that's a really important point, that if you are in the midst of leading or managing change, stamina is essential. And you got to take care of yourself. And I'm curious what she did.
Yeah.
Take care of herself in the midst of all of that.
The only thing I like what she did, Bridget, as well, and I think this happened, so she had allies. So in other words, you know, it's very hard to be against the whole world, you know, and have no one. And so can you have some people, and not in a sense of choosing allies that will back you up because they'll say anything, but people that are truthful and that believe in the change as well, knowing how painful it is, but to have that as well, I think that's really important.
Yeah, I really liked how you said it, that she was willing to say, look, I'm building a different company and this may not be home for everybody.
Yes.
And leaders have to recognize that, right? Yeah. Some people are going to choose a different home. That's okay.
Yeah.
You do not have to convince everybody. That's the other thing, is that she knew she couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me of a group of principals that I coached during COVID. Mm. And, you know, what a horrible time that was for teachers and educators and principals in particular.
Yeah.
Because they were really on the front line of making these critical decisions that really felt like life and death as to, should the school be open? Should it be virtual? Should it be hybrid? And you weren't going to please everybody with that decision, right? And you didn't have all the data to know what was the right decision. The best thing you could do was make the decision thoughtfully, transparently, and courageously, and then stand by it knowing you were going to get a ton of pushback.
Yeah.
And I noticed that the principals that fared better during that very difficult time of change and uncertainty were the ones that recognized they couldn't make everybody happy and stopped trying to.
Yeah.
And that balanced that compassion with decisiveness.
Yeah.
Not an easy thing to do, of course, right?
Not at all. Yeah.
And of course, back to the whole thing we started with in this conversation was learning not to take it personally. Boy, is that hard.
Yeah.
You know, when the daggers are coming for you, it's kind of hard not to take it personally.
Is that the truth? Is that the truth? Yeah.
It's a lifelong journey, is it not?
Yeah. It truly is.
You know, to learn how to lead well, and particularly to learn how to lead well when we're getting resistance. And Ed Friedman called this ability to do this, the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
He felt it was the ultimate test. Mm. So to our listeners, if you haven't mastered the test, if you haven't gotten all the answers correct, just some of them, you're in good company, because it's a process over time. Well, thank you, Irvin.
My pleasure. Thank you as well. I really enjoyed this conversation. Yeah.
Me too. I feel inspired. I'm going to read a little bit more about the incredible example of Anne. How do you say her last name?
Mulcahy.
Mulcahy.
Yeah.
Beautiful example. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Take care, listeners. Thank you for
joining us. Okay, we'll see you next time. Bye now.